All right. Hello, everyone. Larry, that was a wonderful story. Thank you for sharing it. Happy October 8th. I guess Monday, October 8th. Today is a national holiday, so maybe a few of you are usually at work and you're off work today. It's not the biggest holiday in the world, so I know some people are still working. You know, it just depends on where you work as to whether you get the day off or not. But I do notice that it seems like there's a few more people in the room than there typically are on Monday afternoon, so maybe this is because of the holiday, Columbus Day. Hey, Jay. We are here for the 7 steps to awakening, and today we're going to begin with quote number 354. So I am putting a link to quote number 354 in the room. For people who are at work and cheating by listening on the radio, what you want to do is go to RDA7. That is the digit 7. It is not spelled out. RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. And when you get to that website, you'll notice up on the menu bar there are 3 steps so far. We're on step 2, so just click on step 2. And then find the numbering sequence that will allow you to find your way to number 354, because that's where we're beginning today. And before we start, why don't we just have a few moments of silence. Amen. All right, so I will begin, of course, by reading from the book, The 7 Steps to Awakening. Quote number 354, and this is originally coming from the Supreme Yoga. And here we go. It is only the limitation of thought that perceives the world appearance. This world appearance is delusion. It is better not to let the very thought of it arise again in the mind. It is only the limitation of thought that perceives the world appearance. This world appearance is delusion. It is better not to let the very thought of it arise again in the mind. All right, let's look at number 354 in the journal. Awakening heart discipline does not desire interest in fantasy. It does not value delusion. It does not believe an impossible house of mind can exist. Awakening heart discipline is still, not listening to fantasy. It is not attracted to that which is not there. So it's interesting, that it's actually ego that's attracted to ego. Which means that whenever we're caught up in listening to our thoughts, you know, thinking about some little problem that needs a solution, or, you know, imagining some event that's coming up in the future and how that event might play out, or remembering some event from the past and maybe having some regrets or just kind of editing the story in our mind the way we wish it had happened or whatever. Whenever we're off in this kind of thinking, what that really means is that we're in our wrong mind. We're in our wrong mind because it's ego that's attracted to ego. Our true self is not at all attracted to these thoughts. Our true self has no interest in them whatsoever. And then there seems to be what I'm going to call a bridge self. And this bridge self in A Course in Miracles is called the Holy Spirit. It's a bridge from the illusion to the truth. And I think that probably that would be the best description of what this awakening heart discipline represents. But it's, you know, sometimes the word Holy Spirit makes people think of a character that's other than them, which is not at all true. That's an untrue idea about what the Holy Spirit is. An awakening heart discipline, you know, it just doesn't seem to have that feel about it, that it's something other than a part of us. You know, within us, there is this awakening heart discipline. And when we're in touch with that awakening heart discipline, we really only want to be focused on thoughts and practices that are helpful to awakening. What happens is that we don't stay with this awakening heart discipline. Many of us will join with the awakening heart discipline certain times of day. You know, maybe depending on who you are, maybe you get up in the morning and you sit in some way with your awakening heart discipline. Maybe you meditate. Maybe you read from A Course in Miracles, or you contemplate the seven steps to awakening, or, you know, there's something that you do. And when you're engrossed in that state, that's really the only place you want to be. That's the state of awakening heart discipline. But then what happens for most of us is we don't stay there. At some point, the day calls us to get out of our chair and go to work, or, you know, go into interactions with other people in some way. And when we do that, we actually leave the Holy Spirit. We leave the awakening heart discipline. We leave that state that was so focused while we were in that chair. And we literally return to ego. And that's exactly what we do. And our mind gets caught up again in the stories that are attracting our attention. But we know that we're in ego whenever we're listening to those stories, because only ego is interested in those stories. Awakening heart discipline is not. And we know that awakening heart discipline is not, because when we were in that state of mind, those stories weren't present. We were just fully focused on whatever we were contemplating. Or we may have been beyond contemplation and just fully focused on the self. So the challenge then becomes staying with awakening heart discipline, even though we seem to have to get out of the chair. Even though we seem to have to go to a job or in some way go into other interactions with people. Never leaving that state of awakening heart discipline. That's what's truly most helpful to us. You know, if we listen to the Supreme Yoga, it says, it is only the limitation of thought that perceives the world appearance. And then listen to this sentence. This world appearance is delusion. It is better not to let the very thought of it arise again in the mind. And so the way that is being expressed in the journal is, it's better to never leave that awakening heart discipline to return to the distracted ego. No matter what the body seems to need to get up and do. So again, number 354 in the journal. Awakening heart discipline does not desire interest in fantasy. It does not value delusion. It does not believe an impossible house of mind can exist. Awakening heart discipline is still not listening to fantasy. It is not attracted to that which is not there. And again, this is a part of us, a part of our mind, a state within us that we all know because we've all spent at least some time there. So the challenge is to always be there, to always stay there, and not return to ego, not return to the wrong mind, the distracted mind. So let's scroll down then, and underneath the comment and reply area, you will see a little 355 link. You can click on that, and that will take us to our next journal entry. I will also put a link in the room. There's a link directly to number 355. And I'm going to read number 355 from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. This is quoting the Supreme Yoga. It is only in a state of ignorance that the mind dreams of the world appearance, not when it is awake or enlightened. It is only in a state of ignorance that the mind dreams of the world appearance, not when it is awake or enlightened. Returning to the journal, number 355. Whenever I am thinking about the world or the person self, I am caught up in the mind's house of fantasy. Call it ignorance or call it delusion, but it cannot be called wisdom. Wisdom does not pay attention to fantasy. Wisdom is still. So last night, I know that some of you weren't here last night. Last night we looked at some journal entries that talked about the mind's house of fantasy. And basically the gist of this symbol is anything that mind can define, understand, or experience comes after mind, after the making of mind, or the perception of mind, or the belief in mind, however you want to word that. But there's mind, and then there's after mind. There's also, of course, before mind. And anything that comes after mind, mind is able to define, understand, or experience. Anything that is before mind, mind cannot understand it, cannot define it, and cannot experience. So as far as mind is concerned, it's is notness, isn'tness, I called it last night. It's isn'tness, because mind cannot define, understand, or experience it. And we use the symbol of coming from this before mindness, which to mind is nothing, and kind of walking through a doorway, and when you walk through the doorway, you enter mind and mind's house of fantasy. And everything from that point forward is untrue. Everything. And so this says that whenever I am thinking about the world or the person self, you know, myself, Regina, whenever I'm thinking about the world or the person self, I am caught up in mind's house of fantasy. Because I'm in that realm that mind can define, understand, or experience, which means it's after mind, which means it's untrue. The journal entry says, call it ignorance or call it delusion. It doesn't matter which one you call it. but it can't be called wisdom. And the reason it can't be called wisdom is because wisdom doesn't believe in fantasy. So you have to call it either ignorance or delusion, but you can't call it wisdom. You know, in the world, one of the ideas we have is that there's such a thing as good judgment or bad judgment. You know, we say that certain decisions are, you know, poor judgment. That wasn't very smart. And other decisions are good judgment. You know, that was a good decision. But if the decisions are about the world at all, if the decisions are about protecting or promoting the person self, securing some kind of a future for the person self in a world, it's ignorance. It's not good judgment. Anytime that we're believing that the world is real, anytime that we're believing that this person self, this body person is real, we're in that fantasy house of mind. It's like we're a cartoon character in a cartoon, but we're believing that it's real, therefore it's not wisdom. This is reminding me of a quote. It's a completely different quote. It came from much later in the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. It's a Sri Nisargadatta quote that I posted this morning on Facebook. It's a quote that I spent time contemplating this morning. Listen to this Sri Nisargadatta quote. To know that you are a prisoner of your mind, that you live in an imaginary world of your own creation, is the dawn of wisdom. I'll stop right there for a moment. So you see, it's ignorance to believe the world is real, to believe the personality person is real. It's wisdom to start to realize that this is all just imaginary. Cartoon house of fantasy. To know that you are a prisoner of your own mind, that you live in an imaginary world of your own creation, is the dawn of wisdom. To want nothing of it, to be ready to abandon it entirely, is earnestness. That's the definition of earnestness, having no more interest in this cartoon house of fantasy. So again, back at number 355, whenever I am thinking about the world or the person self, I am caught up in the mind's house of fantasy. So that would be the opposite of earnestness. Call it ignorance or call it delusion, but it cannot be called wisdom. Wisdom does not pay attention to fantasy. Wisdom is still. All right, let's scroll down and click on number 356. And I will start by reading number 356 from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, quoting the Supreme Yoga. Such indeed is the nature of this utter ignorance, this delusion, and this world process. Without real existence, there is this illusory notion of egotism. This egotism does not exist in the infinite self. In the infinite self, there is no creator, no creation, no worlds, no heaven, no humans, no demons, no bodies, no elements, no time. Now remember, we said that if everything in the house of fantasy, which is also called aftermind, everything in the house of fantasy can be defined, understood, or experienced by mind. And if you look at this quote from the Supreme Yoga that listed there is no and then listed several things, notice how mind can either define, understand, or experience each of these things. Creator, right? Mind has a concept, an idea of what a creator is. You can understand that. Creation. Worlds. Heaven. Humans. Demons. Bodies. Elements. Time. So none of that's true. It's all a part of the house of fantasy. It's all after mind. It's all illusory. It's all imagination. Such indeed is the nature of this utter ignorance, this delusion, and this world process. Without real experience, there is this illusory notion of egotism. This egotism does not exist in the infinite self. In the infinite self, there is no creator, no creation, no worlds, no heaven, no humans, no demons, no bodies, no elements, no time. All right, let's look at the journal entry number 356. I, the person self, seems to be the center of all I see and all I experience. I, the person self, is even the center of this experience called awakening. Everything, world and awakening, is interpreted, experienced, and understood through the person self. What is this personal self, this filter of everything? Is it so right that its interpretations should be heard as fact, or are they fantasy? If they are fantasy, doesn't that mean this is the house of mind? Isn't this self, which I call I, part of the fantasy house of mind? What is wisdom? Continuing to trust and believe this I, or abandoning it? So as I mentioned, the symbol is a symbol of having, you know, come from before mind, which to the mind is nothingness, having come from before mind and entered into the house of mind. And once we enter into the house of mind, it's like we become this cartoon character in this cartoon world. But, you know, since I'm cartoon and the world is cartoon, I don't notice any of it's cartoon. I think it's real. It all looks the same to me, right? And so I think it's real. And I experience this world. I experience being a child. I experience growing up. I have a lot of experiences in the growing up years, a lot of experiences as a teenager, a lot of experiences as a young adult. Something seems to be kind of imprinted on me from each of these experiences, right? And then at some point, probably around age 30 in my case, at some point I feel like I've matured into an adult, and I start to experience myself as an adult. I start to be, you know, less interested in play or party, which was just an extension of play, and more interested in achievement, more interested in being, you know, responsible, acquiring. And then somewhere in my mid-40s, my interest shifts again. I've spent about 15 years achieving and acquiring, and now I start wanting something that feels more fulfilling. And I start bringing my attention to spirituality. And I start reading books like A Course in Miracles. Start scribing books like the Holy Spirit's interpretation of the New Testament. I become aware of thoughts that I was not aware of in the previous part of my life. But has any of this happened outside of the house of fantasy? Not any of it. It's still a cartoon girl with a cartoon blue book called A Course in Miracles, at having discussions with other cartoon people, starting to say, hey, this is just a cartoon. But everything is still inside the house of mind. What happens is we quit taking ourselves serious in one way, kind of as a kid and as a teenager involved in play. Play is very serious when we're kids and when we're teenagers. We call it partying then, but still, play is very serious. And then we move into the acquiring, at least this was how my life went. That's very serious. And then we move into the spiritual growth phase, and that is still very serious. At what point do we start not taking any of it serious anymore because we really realize it's all just not true? At what point, you could say, do we begin to withdraw from the experience as a whole because somehow we realize it's not true, not any of it? You know what? I'm going back to Facebook. I closed Facebook, but I'm going back to Facebook because I feel like it's time to read the Nisargadatta quote again. Here's the Nisargadatta quote. To know that you are a prisoner of your mind, that you live in an imaginary world of your own creation, is the dawn of wisdom. To want nothing of it, to be ready to abandon it entirely, is earnestness. There's something in NTI where Holy Spirit says that the spiritual path is the highest of all paths in the world. But then Holy Spirit says that what we really have to do, however, is to step off of this path with me, which means this last thing that we're taking serious. You know, first it was play, and then maybe acquiring, and then spirituality. But we're actually still kind of doing everything in the same way, taking everything serious as if the world is real. Even this last thing that we take serious, the spiritual path, at some point we have to quit playing that game too. We have to begin to abandon it entirely, as Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj says, or step off of this path with me, as the Holy Spirit says in NTI. If we go back and look at number 356 again, you know, what is the center of everything for each of us? Whether we're talking about the partying, whether we're talking about the acquiring, whether we're talking about the spiritual path, there's one thing that hasn't changed. And that's the belief that I'm this person. I, the personal self, the center of everything. I think A Course in Miracles calls it the hero of the dream. It's the central fantasy. That I'm this person partying, or I'm this person acquiring, or I'm this person awakening. You can hear that nothing actually has shifted there. We still have this central idea of who I am. I'm still this cartoon character thinking I'm this cartoon character. So So again, number 356, I, the personal self, seems to be the center of all I see and all I experience. I, the personal self, is even the center of this experience called awakening. Everything, world and awakening, is interpreted, experienced, and understood through the personal self. What is this personal self, this filter of everything? Is it so right that its interpretations should be heard as fact, or are they fantasy? And if they are fantasy, doesn't that mean that this is the house of mind, meaning even this experience of awakening is fantasy? Isn't this self, which I call I, part of the fantasy house of mind? And if it's part of the fantasy house of mind, then doesn't everything that happens to it, including, quote, awakening, happen within the fantasy, still within the house of mind instead of before mind? So what is wisdom? What is wisdom? Continuing to trust and believe this I, or abandoning it? And one of the things that, you know, earlier in my life I really did not understand was an error, that now I'm just beginning to realize is an error, is what I'm going to call getting excited about spiritual experiences. You know, I've had a lot of spiritual experiences, and some of those spiritual experiences, they seemed very helpful. I still use them in teaching because they're like the pictures in the book. They seem very helpful. But what I'm starting to really realize is that as we get excited by our spiritual experiences, I guess the question is, who is the I that's excited about my spiritual experience? Really, who is the I that's excited about my spiritual experience? Isn't that still the cartoon character inside the house of mind? It's not before mind. I'm reading right now again the teachings of Ramana Maharshi, which talk about spiritual experiences. That's the book. Some of you have heard me tell the story that, you know, one time when I asked for, please send me something that will take me to the next stage or the next level, I asked that question to Holy Spirit, and I was guided to order a book from Ramana Maharshi. That's the book I ordered, the teachings of Ramana Maharshi. And some of you have heard the story then, how I wasn't interested in the book when it arrived. The way it was written did not attract my attention, so I just kind of threw it down on a table. And then 2 weeks later, the picture on that book began to kind of vibrate. And this is what led to me asking Ramana, what do you want to say to me? And this is what led to receiving the teachings of Inner Ramana. Well, I'm reading that book again. I didn't actually read that book till after these messages from Ramana were received, but it was the first thing I read after the teachings of Inner Ramana. And now I'm reading that book again. And there's a paragraph in it I read this morning where Ramana explains, as we really get focused on the spiritual path, really get focused on the purpose of awakening, and we start to ignore the world, we start to detach from the world, I'll say, that what comes in next to attract our attention, are you ready for this? Our spiritual experiences. And what Ramana teaches in that book is that we have to ignore them as equally as we ignored the world, because that's still mind. And you can see that it's still mind if you ask to who is having the spiritual experience. And in fact, what Ramana says is when these experiences start happening, if instead of getting excited about them and spending time thinking about them and talking about them, if instead you practice self-inquiry regarding who is the one that is having these experiences, well, what Ramana says is that actually you'll awaken fairly quickly if you do that. So it's kind of a paradox, if you think about it. The spiritual experiences that seem to come to help us wake up also just have the ability to keep us on the spiritual path, being someone who's awakening. Reminds me of the story that Muji told, which I told at the very beginning of this series of teachings on the seven steps. The story is the yogini, the female yoga. He tells a story about her, how she's in meditation, and I don't remember the specifics, but she starts having experiences. I think maybe what comes first is colors. I could be wrong. I don't remember. These magnificent colors come, which seem to be some kind of something divine, you know, something outside of this world. But instead of getting distracted by the colors, she asks, she stays in self-inquiry, and she asks, who is it that sees these colors? Who is it that these colors are being presented to? And she stays focused on self-inquiry. And I think from there, it moves into where she starts seeing God. She sees Krishna or somebody like that, and she stays focused in self-inquiry. And because she never moves into excitement about the colors or about the gods she sees as if now they are something real, right? She never moves into the excitement, I've reached something real now. She actually does awaken. She returns to before mind. She exits the house of mind because she doesn't become excited about anything within the house of mind as if it's real. And there's another story, which I've also told before, that comes from that big book that Jay and I read when we went to India, The Human Gospel of Ramana Maharshi, around 850 pages. But there's a story in there about a man who is a devotee of Ramana's. And he tells Ramana that he's ready now to go into the cave. He's ready to abandon the world, abandon all thoughts about the world, and go into a cave and awaken. And Ramana, you know, encourages him to do this. So he goes into the cave, and I don't remember how long he sits in the cave. It's a long time. We're talking 7 years or 12 years or something like that. This guy's not just in the cave for a couple of days. And, of course, in India, you can do that. Because in India, if you go and sit in a cave somewhere, someone will bring you food and stuff. So it's not a problem. They take care of their cave sitters. So he goes, and he sits in this cave. And at one point, he has this vision of a temple on fire. And later that day, someone who comes to the cave to bring him food tells him about a temple, you know, some distance away that caught on fire and burnt down. And he gets very excited because he has been in this meditation for this long time, and now he's developed this ability to see what's happening even though it's not right there in front of him. This makes him feel somewhat omnipotent. You know, he can see what's happening, even though it's not right there in the presence of the body. And so he runs to Ramana, and he's really excited, and he tells Ramana about how he had this vision of the temple burning, and then he found out later in the day from someone that the temple did indeed burn. And all Ramana says to him is, "Why did you leave the cave?" I mean, think about it. That's still inside the house of fantasy. It may seem like an incredible power compared to what we're used to, but that is not before mind. That is not something that mind cannot define, understand, or experience. Therefore, it's in the house of fantasy. So one of the things that's becoming more and more apparent to me as I go through this contemplation of the seven steps is that there are many things that before I would have thought were somehow reality, reaching into the fantasy, when it wasn't, it was just fantasy. Some of it helpful, that I'll agree with, but not reality. So what is wisdom? Continuing to trust and believe this I, the way it interprets spiritual experiences, for example, thinking some great achievement has now occurred. Do I want to continue to trust that mind, or do I want to abandon it? like the yogini. She did not trust that mind. The man who left the cave and ran to Ramana excited did trust it. He trusted the individual's interpretation of the spiritual experience. The yogini did not trust that. The yogini awakened. The man who came running out of the cave did not. So I'll read 356 one more time. I, the personal self, seems to be the center of all I see and all I experience. I, the personal self, is even the center of this experience called awakening. Everything, world and awakening, is interpreted, experienced, and understood through the personal self. What is this personal self, this filter of everything? Is it so right that its interpretations should be heard as fact, or are they fantasy? If they are fantasy, doesn't that mean this is the house of mind? Isn't this self, which I call I, part of the fantasy house of mind? What is wisdom? Continuing to trust and believe this I, or abandon it? And I do have a picture of the yogini hanging in my house as a symbol of this new clarity that's come to me, that even the spiritual experiences are not something that should draw us in. That what we want is before mind. We don't want anything within the house of mind. What we're looking for is something mind cannot define, understand, or experience. Mind cannot experience it. So if mind can experience it, it's not real. All right, let's scroll down and go to number 357. I'll also put a link to 357 in the room. Number 357, coming from the book The Seven Steps to Awakening, which is originally from the Supreme Yoga. There is no creation. The infinite has never abandoned its infinity. That has never become this. There is no creation. The infinite has never abandoned its infinity. That's a capital T, capital H, capital A, capital T. That has never become this. All right, let's look at number 357 in the journal. Everything seen. And by seen, I don't just mean with eyes. I mean sensed or perceived. That's the meaning of seen in this sentence. Everything seen within the house of mind does not exist. I'm just going to say that three times because I think it's really helpful for us to hear it three times. Everything seen within the house of mind does not exist. Everything seen within the house of mind does not exist. Everything seen within the house of mind does not exist. It is fantasy. If mind can define it, understand it, or experience it, it doesn't have to be all three, just any one of those three. If mind can define it, understand it, or experience it, it is part of the house of mind and not real. Truth remains unchanged. Wisdom does not confuse the two, because wisdom does not know two. Wisdom knows only one, truth, reality. And I don't know that I really have anything to say about this. This came in April. So you can see that April was a time for me when this clarity was just really being, I'm going to call it hammered into the mind. So that I couldn't easily become confused again. In fact, I would say that's what happened as the result. Maybe I do have something to say. I would say that's what's happened as the result of this repetitive hitting on this particular point. I remember a time when I could become confused. I remember a time when somebody would send out some newsletter that maybe said something like, in 2012, which by the way, this is 2012, so now we know it's probably not true. I think some people still don't know it's not true, but a few more months they will. In 2012, it's the end of the Mayan calendar, and we have all of this proof that it's the end of the Mayan calendar, and we have all of this proof that it's a great awakening. Listen to me very carefully, and notice that, by the way, you can understand my words. You have some understanding of what I'm saying, and realize again, if mind can understand it, it's not true. So in 2012, the end of the Mayan calendar, this great awakening is going to occur. There are going to be some things, some shifts in the world that are going to appear difficult, but actually, those shifts are just helping us to awaken, to move us into a new realm of awakened state. There's going to be a massive awakening. Everybody after 2012 and after these shifts, although some of them may seem somewhat difficult, everyone is going to be at a higher state of vibration, a higher state of understanding. This is a very great time. Did I say anything that you cannot comprehend? And if it happened, okay, if it happens on, what is it, December 21st? Let's say it happens. Is there anything in what I just said that you won't experience when it happens? What is the definition of not real? Mind can define it, understand it, or experience. Oh my goodness, well, you're going to have a bath today, Jamie. Mind can understand, define, and experience a dirty dog. We have one. Are you going to try wiping her off? Yeah, that might help a little bit. She's pretty dirty. What you doing out there, you dirty, dirty dog? She's like, yeah, Jacqueline, sure. Hey, good listening. Anyway, if mind can understand, define, or experience it, it's not true. So even if everything this newsletter said was going to happen happens, that doesn't make it true. This is where I used to get confused. To me, before, a prediction like that would have been true if it happened. Like, hey, 2 years before December 2012, I read this. And now it's December 2012, and this has happened. This is true. That's not right. That's just believing fantasy. So what's really nice about this period of time when this was just hammered into me is I got to the point where I can't be confused. I can't be confused that some newsletter about 2012, even if it happens, is true. I will point out, however, that a number of the predictions in that particular newsletter, those time frames have already passed and they haven't happened. But that doesn't matter, even if they had happened. Even if the newsletter with its predictions had been right on, and on this date this happened, and on this date this happened, and on this date this happened, I think by now we're not supposed to have any electricity, according to the newsletter I'm talking about. And if right now we had no electricity, and Jacqueline and I were cooking on my outdoor fire pit, that still doesn't make it true. You see how easily we get confused? If the I that is awakening is not true, how can a massive shift and now millions of people awakening be true? It's all within the story. It's all within the fantasy. That became very clear to me through this repeated hammering on this point. If mind can define it, understand it, or experience it, it is not true. It's part of the house of fantasy, including the Great Awakening. Why don't we just go back to Nisargadatta, which is my quote for the day. We'll read Nisargadatta one more time, then we'll come back to this. Nisargadatta from Facebook. To know that you are prisoner of your mind, that you live in an imaginary world of your own creation, is the dawn of wisdom. To want nothing of it, to be ready to abandon it entirely, is earnestness. So you can see how we're not being earnest if we're getting caught up in stories about 2012. Because we like stories about great awakenings, because we're spiritual people now. See, it's still cartoon character. Cartoon character caught up in a cartoon world. Remember the yogini. As gods appeared to her, she did not get caught up in the gods. She merely continued to practice self-inquiry. To whom is it that these images appear? To want nothing of it, to be ready to abandon it entirely, is earnestness. All right, so number 357 from the journal again. Everything seen, which means sensed and perceived, everything seen within the house of mind does not exist. Everything seen within the house of mind does not exist. It is fantasy. If mind can define it, understand it, or experience it, it is part of the house of mind and not real. Truth remains unchanged. Truth doesn't have giant shifts and great awakenings. That's a change. Truth remains unchanged. Wisdom does not confuse the two, because wisdom does not know two. Wisdom knows only one, truth, reality. All right, let's scroll down and click on number 358. Number 358 in the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, says, the power of net, is this word nescience? It's like N-E and then science, nescience. You don't know your, she's not overly educated either. All right, so tell you what I'm going to do, gang, if you'll just forgive the little vocabulary here. I'm going to go ahead and take time to look this up. I think it's nescience, but I still don't know what it means, so let's look it up. Okay, here's what it sounds like. Are you ready?
Nescience.
Oh, nescience. Here we go. Here, let's listen to her one more time. This is dictionary.com's lady.
Nescience.
There we go. Nescience, okay? And this is what it means. It means lack of knowledge or ignorance. Well, dang it. When we were lacking our knowledge on that, we were nescience.
Nescience.
There we go. All right. All right, so here we go. The power of nescience. The power of nescience is capable of creating a total confusion between the real and the unreal. So this is what I just talked about, that this period of time in April when this was really being hammered into me. This eliminated that confusion for me entirely. Like, I really don't get caught up in believing, you know, like some yogi in India. You know, I'm told, and I have no reason to doubt that within the dream this isn't true. I don't have proof of it, but there's no reason to argue it. I am told that there are yogis in the Himalayas who are as old as 750 years old. And there are people who are highly impressed by that, because most of us, you know, what, 80 if we're lucky? Maybe in our 80s now we're dying in America. As a general rule, some younger, some older, but 80s probably is about the average. 750 years, that's impressive. No, and it's not to me. And the reason it's not to me is because I don't have this confusion anymore between the real and unreal. When people are impressed by somebody that has somehow managed their breathing and managed, you know, all of their internal organs with the mind, right? People think, oh, this proves the power of the mind. Because these guys, using the power of the mind, are able to extend their life, right? People are impressed by this. But that's because of this confusion about what's real and what's not real. Again, everything I just said, if I tell you there is a yogi in a cave in the Himalayas who, through the power of his mind, can rejuvenate his organs so that they never age, and he's now 750 years old, have I said anything that you can't understand? If you go and visit this man, my God, you could spend your money, you could go, you probably have to climb some mountain somewhere, but you could do it. You could visit this man. Maybe, assuming the story is true, you could verify it for yourself. You could verify it for yourself. You could see this man. You could come back and you could say, Regina, I met him. He's definitely 750 years old. I know it for a fact. They proved it to me somehow. This is real. No, it's not. See, that's where we get confused. We get impressed. Remember, the guy who ran out of the cave was impressed by the fact that he saw the temple burning, even though it was not in his presence. But the yogini was not impressed by the gods who formed themselves before her. Number 358, the power of
nations
is capable of creating a total confusion between the real and the unreal. And every one of us has experienced that confusion, have we not? Maybe we still experience it now. Maybe when we read about some guy in South America who can heal every illness, anybody who's brought to him, no matter what their illness is, all he does is look at them and they're instantly healed. We are impressed. Can the mind understand that? If you have cancer from your head to your toe, and you go to South America and you meet this guy and he just looks at you and you're healed, did you experience that? Then it's not true. You see how deep this goes? Do you see how much this nescience, this ignorance, has had a hold on us? We think we're moving towards truth. Truth is the key word here. We think we're moving towards truth, but then we begin to have these other experiences, experiences of gods, experiences of being an apple, experiences of miraculous healings, experiences of, and we say, that's something real. And we're still in the house of mind. We're still in the house of fantasy. We're still in the unreal, declaring something real. The power of nescience is capable of creating a total confusion between the real and the unreal. All right, all of that, we haven't even gotten to the journal yet, so let's go to the journal. Number 358. It is time to be honest beyond the human definition of honesty. Because again, if I had cancer all over my body and I went to South America and some guy just looked at me and he was healed and I came back and told you I had cancer all over my body, this guy just looked at me and I'm healed. I mean, that's not a lie if that happened, not by the human definition of honesty, right? That's true. But this says it is time to be honest beyond the human definition of honesty. Because our human definition of honesty is still coming from the cartoon character caught up in the cartoon dream. And so it's believing fantasy as if it matters. It is time to be honest beyond the human definition of honesty. What is known, absolutely known from direct experience, and one thing we're going to have to learn, and we will learn as we go forward in the journal, is what is direct experience. Like right now, for some reason, not sure why, because I usually don't experience any pain, I have a little pain in my neck right here. Well, is that a direct experience, a pain in my neck? I feel it. Actually, if you listen to my teaching on Saturday night, you already know that's not a direct experience. That's a point of experience, which is different. A point of experience is an illusory experience that convinces us that the illusion is real. So a pain in the neck is actually an illusory experience that convinces me that I am a body. I have a little problem here, and you know, maybe I should go stretch my neck or take aspirin or whatever, right? It's not a direct experience. And so one of the things we're going to look at as we move forward with this inquiry that's really starting to cook here in the Seven Steps Journal is we're going to look at what is direct experience. And what's the difference between direct experience and illusory experience. But it is time to be honest beyond the human definition of honesty. What is known, absolutely known from direct experience, and what is believed, learned, and adopted as an idea of truth. So one way to see the difference using the symbol we've been using is that if it's absolutely known from direct experience, it was known prior to entering the house of mind. Direct experience is known consistently. You could say within and outside of the house of mind. There's no change in it. That's direct experience. So once we entered the house of mind and we began to have bodies and we began to have little pains in our neck, that's something that was actually learned and adopted as an idea of truth. So what is known, absolutely known from direct experience, and again, as we go forward in the journal, we'll look more and more at this idea of direct experience. What is known, absolutely known from direct experience, and what is believed, learned, and adopted as an idea of truth. An idea of truth. An idea of truth is, I have a pain in my neck. Again, that's not a lie. I have a pain in my neck right now. But it's only an idea of truth that we all willingly buy into. Do not abandon honesty. Let critical honesty continuously answer this question, the question being, what is known, absolutely known from direct experience, and what is believed, learned and adopted as an idea of truth? That's the question. Let critical honesty continuously answer this question until the true answer is clear. So that's really an assignment that is going to take us from this point forward in the journal. So we're going to be returning over and over and over through an inquiry and looking to see what's true and what's not true. So this is just, I call this a kickoff. Number 358 for me is a kickoff of an assignment that's carried out throughout the journal. So we can scroll down and click on number 359. I got a text. I heard my little whistle upstairs. All right, number 359. Oh, here we go again, this word nescience. Is that how you say it? I already forgot, but I closed it. Was it nescience? Okay. Nescience and the self cannot have any relationship. Nescience, or ignorance, and the self cannot have any relationship. That's the quote from the Seven Steps to Awakening. Let's look at the journal. belief upholds mind's house of fantasy. Therefore, belief hides truth with fantasy. This is why one must recognize and question belief. And this is one of those points, you know, there are some points that ever since I've known David Fishman, he like hits on over and over and over again. You know, I think of him as an angel and he has certain notes he's supposed to sing. And this is one of the notes I see him singing, especially when he spells belief by emphasizing the L-I-E, the lie in the middle of it. Belief upholds mind's house of fantasy. Therefore, belief hides truth with fantasy. This is why one must recognize and question belief. And the problem with us is that we don't recognize our beliefs as just beliefs. There are so many beliefs that we have that we think of as a fact. Like just this year, I've always had a thin waistline. It's just a part of the natural body that I seem to have. You know, I was a pear-shaped woman, gain weight in the thighs and the butts, but not the waistline. And just this year, I've got a little belly. Everything I just told you is belief. But we fall for that so easily. Everything I just told you is belief. Belief about what I am, you know? Belief about how experience, even the idea that experience changes over time, that's not true. You know, we're so caught up in belief that we don't even recognize belief as belief. I mean, there are some beliefs we recognize as beliefs. For example, you know, do you believe that Jesus was born from a virgin? Right? We recognize that that's a belief. At least, you know, some of us do. Some people may believe it so much they don't even see it as a belief. They see it as a fact. But do you realize, get ready for this, do you realize whether Jesus was born of a virgin or whether Jesus was not born of a virgin, and whether we were there to see it, it's still belief? So that's where we drop the ball. We say, I know that he was not born of a virgin because I was looking through the window and I saw Joseph and Mary having sex. So I know. You know? See, even that's belief. You know, we have that saying, seeing is believing. What we're going to notice as we go further through the journal is that that statement is completely true. Seeing is believing. The problem is when we hear it, our mind interprets it as seeing is proof that it's a fact. That's not even the saying. The saying isn't seeing that is proof that it's a fact. It's seeing is believing. We believe what we see. We believe what we smell, what we taste, what these senses tell us. We believe what we learn with the mind. But again, don't forget the symbol of the cartoon character in a cartoon world. If we're a cartoon character in a cartoon world, of course we're going to see all kinds of things, but that doesn't make any of them true. So it's just like, you know, going back to 358 and the seven steps to awakening, the power of nescience is capable of creating a total confusion between the real and unreal. That's what's happened to us, a total confusion. And this is what one of the first things we have to be set free from. Because as soon as somebody calls you tonight and tells you, you know, some story, you know, like stories I've told you, you know, like I burnt my hand and then it was healed, and we think, wow, something cool happened there. And I was, you know, me too. Me too. I burnt my hand severely. It was healed. Not realizing that a cartoon character burnt a hand and a cartoon character had a healing. Where's the reality in that? And then we either believe or we don't believe Regina's story. But either way, it's still happening within mind. One of the things that we do learn on this spiritual path that is worthwhile is that the more we realize we don't know, the better. And I think that that's one thing that this points out. The more we realize that we don't know, the better. Because everything that we think we know is probably just House of Fantasy stuff. Which means it's a belief that's upholding the House of Fantasy for us. So belief upholds mind's House of Fantasy. Therefore, belief hides truth with fantasy. This is why one must recognize and question belief. And again, this is just a part of the kickoff. It's telling me where we're going here. We're going to start looking at some of these beliefs that we maybe didn't even recognize as beliefs. We thought they were facts. And we're going to begin to question them with clarity. So we can get rid of this ignorance, this nescience, this capability of being completely confused between what's real and unreal. We need to clear this away, this fog. All right, going back to Facebook again. Look at what Nisargadatta said today to me. Actually, I just read it today. He didn't say it. I went by thinking I had some incredible spiritual experience in this unreal House of Fantasy. Okay, here's what Nisargadatta said. To know that you are a prisoner of your mind, that you live in an imaginary world of your own creation, is the dawn of wisdom. Right? That's just the dawn of wisdom. So what's happening in this kickoff is we are moving towards the dawn of wisdom. We're moving towards knowing that this is all unreal. Getting clarity on that so we can no longer be confused about what's real and unreal. But Nisargadatta only calls that the dawn of wisdom. So this isn't, such a giant step, although it sounds like it. We still have to move to the next phase, which is wanting nothing of it, being ready to abandon it entirely. But I don't think most of us are going to move to that phase of wanting nothing of it and being ready to abandon it entirely until there is some wisdom that it's not real. Because as long as we think it's real, it's going to be too important to abandon. So it makes sense that the wisdom needs to come first, at least for the average bear. So belief upholds mind's House of Fantasy. Therefore, belief hides truth with fantasy. This is why one must recognize and question belief. All right, let's scroll down and click on number 360. And you may have recognized that although I'm going through the seven steps to awakening, and this is what I would call some pretty intense teaching. There's nothing here that isn't also truly taught in A Course in Miracles. It's there too, especially in Workbook Lesson 132 really jumps out at me. All right, so number 360 from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. Thought alone creates all these divisions and illusions. When it ceases, creation ceases. Thought alone creates all these divisions and illusions. When it ceases, creation ceases. Number 360 in the journal. Awakening cannot be claimed while thought and perception continue. Thought and perception are illusion, and illusion is not awakening. Realization can be experienced while thought and perception continue. Realization is the true understanding that thought and perception are unreal. Realization is not distracted by thought or perception, and it stands at the threshold of awakening. So here, realization is being used in the same way the term true perception is being used in A Course in Miracles. Like, it's still appearing to be a cartoon character in a cartoon world. But enough realization has occurred that you can be that yogini. That even as, you know, problems come and they dance right before you, or gods come and they dance right before you, you don't get distracted and caught up in either. Because enough realization has occurred, this is not true. So there's still thought and there's still perception. It's not awakened, but it's right at the threshold of awakening. True perception, as the Course calls it. Again, this is being given just so we get clear, you know, because that nescience that we have wants us to be confused on everything, including being confused on what is awakening. It does. It really does want us to think that awakening is something that can happen, and yet I still experience the world. It's just now I'm awake in the world. And this is saying, if you're still experiencing a world, you are not awake. Now, you can reach a state of realization, and one of the symbols of that state of realization is how incredibly unimportant everything you perceive is, how detached you are from it. This reminds me of the vision I had when I was writing N.T.I. Matthew, the crucifixion scene, and while writing that scene, I had a vision, and in the vision, I was on the cross. And, you know, I've told this story before, so you probably know it by heart, but, you know, I saw all the things that was described in the scene in the Bible. I saw the soldiers casting lots for my clothes. I saw the women crying. I saw angry people swearing at me, throwing rocks at me, some of them. I saw some people just going in and out of Jerusalem on a road that wasn't too far away, doing their best not to even look. You know, they don't want to see this crucifixion scene. But what was amazing about this vision, this experience that I had, was that as I hung on this cross, all of that had no meaning to me at all. None. I mean, not even the form of what some people would call my mother crying. I mean, the whole thing had no meaning to me at all. No more meaning than some of these TV shows that's running on the TV. You know, when Jasmine is actually the one who's in charge of the remote. I mean, you know, I can see the forms of the people talking, but I have no interest. There was no interest. And in fact, what I experienced was being fully absorbed is a great word. Being fully absorbed in this love, bliss, gratitude that I knew was real. So I would say that's a complete realization that's standing on the threshold of awakening, because there was still perception, but there was no interest in it. None. You know, and I've told people before that, you know, I don't see how that mind of Jesus, as we call it, how it could have even stayed in the world beyond that point, because how do you stay in the world if there's nothing here, no interest. And again, if we go back to Nisargadatta from Facebook today, to know that you are a prisoner of your mind, that you live in an imaginary world of your own creation, is the dawn of wisdom. To want nothing of it, to be ready to abandon it entirely, is earnestness. Number 360 in the journal. Awakening cannot be claimed while thought and perception continue. Let's not get confused about that. That's not awakening. Awakening is outside of mind. It's back into what mind would call nothingness or isn'tness. Now, from what I'm told, that's not what's really there. You know, from what I'm told by people like Ramana Maharshi and Sri Nisargadatta, that's not what's really there. Somehow that nothingness is also everythingness, but the mind wants to try and understand that, and anything the mind can understand out of that is just going to be back into fantasy again. So I think it's best just to leave it alone. I really think it's best just to leave it alone. and not even try to imagine what truth is, because as soon as we try to imagine it, we bring it right back into the realm of fantasy again. But what we can understand is that if I'm sitting here, you know, with a sore neck and I have to pee and I'm getting hungry, I'm not awake. I'm still a cartoon character in a cartoon world. We can understand that. And I'm totally cool with saying, I'm not awake. It feels like that honesty that's being asked for. It's not the fad nowadays. The fad nowadays is to say, I am awake. But somehow that doesn't feel right in my inner self. I know that somehow there's a truth to that. I do know that. There's a truth to that, because the awakened mind has never fallen asleep. But I feel like staying the student right now. That feels right. So awakening cannot be claimed while thought and perception continue. Thought and perception are illusion, and illusion is not awakening. Realization can be experienced. Now here's something that can be experienced. Again, the Course calls it the real world, the happy dream, true perception, right? Realization can be experienced while thought and perception continue. Realization is the true understanding that thought and perception are unreal. So again, I'm not going to be pulled in by some apparent problem thinking it's real. Realization knows that apparent problem is not real. It's not confused. There's no nescience there. Realization is the true understanding, not just intellectual understanding. The true understanding that thought and perception are unreal. Realization is not distracted by thought or perception. How many of us still get distracted by thought or by what we perceive? Then we're not even to realization yet. We're still in the nescience. We're still getting confused between what's real and what's unreal. Realization is not distracted by thought or perception, and it stands at the threshold of awakening. It's exactly what A Course in Miracles teaches, although it uses different language. But what's happening, at least for me in this journal, is it's just making it really clear and really honest. You know, so if somebody says, where are you, nescience, realization, or awake? I say, it's not any fun, but obviously nescience, you know? Because I still find myself getting distracted by thoughts. I still occasionally see something showing up that I think I have to put my attention to, right? So obviously I'm in with the nescience group. Now there's some dawning that's happening here. There is some realizing that's happening here. But even to call myself realized, to say that I never get distracted by thought or perception, whew, major dishonesty going on there. So I think right now I'll still say I'm in the nescience group. That's where I stand. And I'll still stay the student, and I'll still listen to inner guidance and follow it, because it doesn't seem like I'm ready do anything else yet. But I'm going to be very tuned in to that inner guidance. I'm going to be as tuned in as I can be. I'm going to fall into nescience as little as possible. In fact, now I'm going to go all the way back to the first quote that we read today. I think starting over again is a great place to end today. Not there yet. Hold on. We did a lot of quotes. Here it is, number 354. I'll give you guys the link in case you want to go back there, or you can just click your way back like I did. Number 354 is where we started. Let's end there. Awakening heart discipline. I've said we all know what this is. We all experience it at least sometimes. Even if we're still in the Neshans crowd, we all know what this awakening heart discipline is. A Course in Miracles calls it Holy Spirit. Awakening heart discipline does not desire interest in fantasy. It does not value delusion. It does not believe an impossible house of mind can exist. Awakening heart discipline is still. Not listening to fantasy, it is not attracted to that which is not there. So as long as I have any ability whatsoever to become confused and think that something in the world, this body, this person, that problem, that God appearing before me now, is real, as long as I can get confused about anything at all, I need to focus on staying in awakening heart discipline. That's my practice. Learning to stay in that state of being as clear as I can be. I need to be conscious about that, focused on that. I can't just say, okay, I had a great 2 hours this morning, now I'm going to get up and, you know, return my mind to the world. Because if I get up and return my mind to the world, I'm going to stay steeped in nescience. My goal now is to move from nescience to realization. That's my step. And so I move from nescience to realization by staying in awakening heart discipline as much as possible, by being focused on staying there. No matter what the body's doing, no matter whether I'm out playing, whether I'm working, whether I'm, you know, in a conversation with someone, my goal, my purpose, the only thing I really need to be doing now is staying in awakening heart discipline. That's going to take me out of nescience into realization. So although we just spent a lot of time talking about how everything is not real, everything that we know of is not real, at least we ended up with knowing what we need to do about it. Staying in awakening heart discipline always. Now next week, I'll write Dove a separate email, but next week I will not be here on Sunday or Monday for Seven Steps because I'll be at a silent retreat, hopefully focused on awakening heart discipline. So I won't be here. But I'll be back in a couple weeks, and I look forward to being back to continue with the Seven Steps to Awakening. All right. Bye, everyone.